Chapter 3. Escape. Hounslow, Iwell Province Capital. Honor and Moreland watched with conflicted feelings as the Narthani army left Hounslow and moved east toward Moreland. After 2.5 months of Narthani language immersion since her capture, she understood enough of Erdalyn's conversations with subordinates to gather that the Narthani had prepared a major move into Moreland. She worried because her clan and family lay in the Narthani's path. However, she felt thankful when she heard Erdalyn would be away for several 6 days or more, a time she wouldn't share his bed. She refused to accept that she might never escape. A capitulation made by many other captive women, such as Gwynedd Wolston, the pretty slave who had advised Onarind on that first night to do whatever necessary to survive. The two women had become friends in the manner that happened when sharing what they couldn't share with others. Gwynedd's master was an Arthani supply officer, one of the breed that armies depended on to keep functioning, but who was not part of a fighting unit. He had deigned to give Gwynedd a name after she bore a child, a name Gwynedd never told Onarin. After being a Narthani slave for 2 years, and with a half-Narthani child, Gwynedd didn't foresee a better future. Her family was dead or scattered, but she had assumed that whatever her future held would be on Cadellium. She hadn't considered that her master might take her away from the island forever. That assumption proved false when 2 months ago, her master informed her that when he returned to Narthon, he intended to take her and the child with him, a promise given as a reward but received as a sentence. Onarind had risked speaking to Gwynedd about her thoughts of escape, something Gwynedd discouraged because of the unlikely success and the consequences. In the last 2 months, Onarind had met a score of other Cadelli women slaves and a few from lands beyond Cadellium and brought to the island with their masters, both military and tradesmen. A quiet network had formed among the women, spreading news and providing a semblance of emotional and physical support. One secret shared among a few women, and only among those most trusted, was a brew made from a bark of a native Cadellium root, which reduced the chances of pregnancy. It was a dangerous game. If a master decided a woman was barren, he might discard her to the brothels. Gwynedd began taking the herb after the birth of her child, hoping the one child would convince her master of her fertility and allow her to delay more children as long as possible. Onarind had initially been so despondent that Gwynedd feared she would attempt suicide. But sharing the herb's secret had assuaged Onarin's dread of becoming pregnant. On the occasions when their masters were away, Onarind, Gwynedd, and other women spent the few quiet hours together, either in silence or talking of inconsequential matters, as if to pretend they were back at their original homes. On one of those days, just past sundown, 6 women sat under trees adjacent to Erdalyn's villa. A 6 day after the army had left, rumor spread that the army was moving slowly through Moreland, burning towns, but with no major fighting yet. A ratcheting up of the city's background noise interrupted the women's recollections of home. They heard shouts of many voices raised in emotion, but didn't know the cause. One of the women served an officer of the town defenses, and she left to find out more news. She returned walking fast and breathing hard.
Word is spreading that there was a battle at Moreland City, and the Narthani may have lost.
Onarin's heart jumped into her throat. Moreland defeated the host that left here? That's not possible. Even if other clans came to Moreland's aid. Or is it possible?
Are you sure that's what you heard? Pressed Gwynedd.
Yes, yes, and more. Word just came that the clans overran a Narthani and Iwali supply base in Parthmal, and clan riders were seen only a few miles from here. The entire remaining garrison, Narthani and Iwalis, are called to the defenses. I heard them say the clans might attack this city.
But the clans couldn't possibly take Hounslow, argued Gwynedd. Not with the defences, the cannon, and so many Nathanian Iwalese fighting men.
Suddenly, they could hear Nathani horns and drums beating rhythms.
Calling to stations, that's what it means,
said another woman.
Maybe the clans can't take the city, but that's the signal to man all defences.
Suddenly, Anoran knew this might be her only good chance to escape.
Will all the men be at the defences? She asked.
At first, if they decide an attack is imminent, then they'll reduce those standing too.
The defences of Hanslow are mainly on the three sides of the town away from the river, aren't they? Asked Anorind.
Yes,
answered a puzzled Gwynedd.
Why? The bluff on the riverbank is too steep for a major attack, and they only keep a few men on the walls.
Does anyone know of a way through the defences from inside without being seen?
Anorind! I hope you aren't thinking of trying to escape,
warned Gwynedd.
You would never make it out. And if you did, then what?
The woman who had gone for news spoke up.
I know a way. Several times I've accompanied my master as he inspected the fortifications.
I think he liked to show me off to the common soldiers, she added bitterly.
There's a partially collapsed section of wall that can be squeezed through. From there, it's a steep climb down to the river. Would they have men at the opening?
Questioned Honorant.
How would I know?
Asked the woman.
I only saw it twice, and only in daylight, with no alert ongoing. What they're doing now, I can't say.
Honorin could hardly believe what she contemplated.
Can you tell me exactly how to find it?
No.
But I can show you. I think you're right. This may be the best chance to escape.
You're both crazy, snapped Gwynedd.
You know what will happen when you're caught.
If we're caught, countered Honorind.
If we get there and can't find the opening and we're asked, we'll just say we were frightened and looking for a place to hide from the murderous clansmen we heard were coming to rape us.
She spit out the last words with venom.
Breathing hard, Gwynedd wrung her hands.
I still say you're both crazy. But I'm going too. Let me get Morwena.
Two of the other women voiced they would also come, while the sixth thought them all insane, but she would go back to her quarters and wish them God's protection. The remaining five huddled together.
Take nothing but the clothing anyone would normally wear around the city, said Anorind.
She waved a hand over the florid and expensive robe Erdalyn had insisted she wear.
The clothing we're wearing now would identify us as officer slaves. Change into less conspicuous clothing. Nothing else. Otherwise, it will raise suspicion if we're stopped.
When should we try it?
Asked a woman.
Now, said Anorind.
The five women scattered and reassembled again 30 minutes later, but now there were seven of them, three with small children.
They were there when I went to get Morwena, said Gwynedd desperately, clutching her asleep 2-year-old daughter. I couldn't leave them if there was any chance.
You idiot,
hissed one of the original five.
You give us away!
I didn't see a single Narthani or Iwili soldier anywhere, said Gwynedd.
There's no one to see us.
Another woman agreed. All of the men were on the walls and the fortifications. They started off. By the halfway point to the riverside of town, they had seen only women, children, and a few of the oldest men, until they came near a walled compound with a single guard at the door. They were about to detour around the street when Anorin stopped and stared at the compound.
That's a troop brothel, isn't it?
She asked, emotionless.
Yes,
whispered Gwynedd.
How many women do they keep in there?
I think around 30 to 50, said Gwynedd, depending on how many are still alive and when they brought in new ones.
Anorin peeked around the corner at the guard.
So far we haven't been stopped. I think we'll make it to the opening. I'm thinking that if we get away, will I spend the rest of my life remembering the women left behind those walls? Oh, merciful God, Honorind, don't tell me you want to try to bring them along too,
blurted Gwynedd.
There's a guard at the gate and who knows how many more inside. Why don't we just run through streets screaming we're trying to escape? I have to try.
Will you help or not?
Of course I will, you stupid bitch. But what about the guard?
There's only one at the gate. Surely, four or five women who happen to walk up to him, asking for information about what's happening, can take care of him.
Like how?
Asked a short black-haired woman holding a two-year-old boy.
Like this, said Anarind, pulling out an 8-inch bone-handled knife of Erdalyn's.
Or this, said Gwynedd, holding a kitchen butcher knife. The seven women produced five knives of different shape and length.
So much for not bringing anything except innocuous clothing, thought Anarind.
While they watched, two Iwilese women scurried down the street and past the guard, who gave them a cursory glance and leaned back against the wall by the door. A scruffy dog ran up to the guard and then off again, dodging a boot.
What if there are more guards inside?
Asked one woman.
Look at the key ring he's carrying, said Gwynedd. Why would he have so many keys and be outside the building if there were more men inside?
Too many of us and he'll be suspicious, said Honorant.
I think three of us can surprise him if we walk up and pretend to ask him something. Which three?
Asked a trembling woman Honorant didn't know.
I'll be one. I can get him to look at me,
Honorant said and clenched her jaw. She lowered her hood and shook out her long blonde hair.
I still think you're insane.
But then so am I, offered Gwynedd.
She volunteered a third woman, who nodded assent and flashed a wicked-looking, curved-bladed weapon. Honorin put a hand on each of the other two women.
When we get to him, I'll try to get him to turn to face me, and the two of you move behind him.
Then we'll do what we have to do. The three of them walked out from around the corner and toward the guard. He noticed them at 30 feet away. His eyes scanned all three, then settled on Honorind, who tried to transform herself back to the young girl and woman who used to tease boys and men with the way she walked and tossed her hair. He licked his lips, and his eyes reflected his thoughts as they roamed over her body and face.
Pardon me,
she said in her broken Narthani, putting her right hand on the wall a foot from the guard.
We hear all the horns and drums, but don't know what's happening.
She flicked her hair away from her eyes back to her shoulders. He turned to face her. The other two women didn't exist at that moment, but reappeared as Gwynedd drove a knife into his back under the ribs. He gasped and rose on his toes from the shock, but before he could move anymore, the other woman hacked at the side of his throat and Honorin jabbed her knife into his stomach. All three women jumped back as the man flayed his arms around, dying as he stood, but still by reflex reaching for his sword. Honorind leaped forward again and thrust her knife into his throat so hard she lost her grip, but the hilt end of the blade ripped a gash in her palm. His eyes wide in shock and disbelief, the guard sank to his knees, Honorind's knife in his neck, blood flowing down his neck. His hands grasped at his wounds, and his legs kicked out several times. He never made a sound.
My God, my God, my God,
Gwynedd chanted over and over.
Quick, get him inside, ordered Honorind.
I pray to merciful God there are no more guards on the other side of the door, moaned Gwynedd.
Honorind tested the door. It was locked. She pulled the key ring off the guard's belt. There were 10 keys. The fifth one turned the lock, and she opened the door slowly and looked inside at a small spare room with 2 desks and 2 hallways, one to each side. No one was in the room. She pushed the door open wider
and they drag the motionless body of the guard into the room and to one side. Suddenly, a woman's voice rang out from the left hall.
"Is the warning over?" called a woman. "Well?" asked the voice again,
and then a middle-aged woman in an expensive red robe and sandals appeared. She stopped when she saw the three women.
"Who?"
she started to say, and then noticed the guard's body on a blood trail. The woman turned to run, but Gwinnett slammed her against the wall, threw her to the ground, and held her knife at the woman's throat.
"Shout, and I'll cut your throat!"
hissed Gwinnett. The blood-covered knife and the expression on the wielder made no other convincing necessary.
"Are there other guards in the building?"
The woman shook her head, her eyes wide and frightened.
"Where are the women?"
"They're locked in the commons rooms at the end of the hall,"
the woman gasped, with an arm toward the rightward hall. Honorind raced down the right hall. It was 60 to 70 feet long, with open doors every 8 feet. As she ran, she glanced into the open doors and got quick glimpses of narrow rooms with no windows, and in each room, a low wood-frame bed with a bare mattress, nothing else. Unbidden, her mind flashed that here was where the women worked to an endless line of Narthani soldiers. She shut the images out as she reached the door at the end of the hall and fumbled with the keys. This time, the eighth key turned the lock. She shoved open the door. Light from candles reflected off a sea of faces with blank or frightened expressions, all looking at her. None of the women uttered a word.
"There is no time for anything," barked Honorind. "All the Narthani soldiers are at the city's walls. There are supposed to be clansmen about to attack. I and some others are trying to escape out of the city before the soldiers come back. Anyone who wants to come with us has to come right now."
Dozens of women talking at once broke the silence.
"Escape? It's not possible."
"Who are you?"
"It's a trick. Escape to what or where?"
The din rose and rose until Honorin screamed,
"Shut up! Or guards will come back!"
The tumult quieted.
"Is there really a chance to escape?"
asked a slender, brown-haired girl of perhaps 17 years, tears running down her cheeks.
"It's a chance," said Honorind. "We don't know if we can make it, but it's all we have."
"They'll kill us if we leave the building,"
stated a woman in the back of the room.
"Would you rather be killed trying to escape, or stay here to service Narthani until you die?"
grated the young woman.
"There's no time for talking," reiterated Honorind. "Those who want to come with us, follow me right this moment. We're leaving now. Any others, just stay in this room and wait for the Narthani to come back."
Honorind turned and started back down the hall. She heard the drum of many footsteps behind her. By now, the other four of the original 7 women had gathered with the children in the anteroom.
"Oh, God," said Gwinnett. "They're going to hear us just from the dust we raise and the drum of footfalls."
Honorin turned to the women who had crowded into the room.
"Pass the word on down to follow us and keep quiet."
"What do we do about the woman?"
asked Gwinnett, referring to the richly dressed woman cowering in a corner. The young woman, plus several other women, glanced to the corner. A feral look came over her.
"She won't be a problem,"
she said, as the woman in the corner disappeared under a mass of brothel women. Choking sounds followed, an aborted scream, and then nothing. The woman nearest the outer door would guide them to the supposed opening in the defense wall. She peered into the street, then turned her head back.
"No one in sight. Let's go."
Had there been Narthani or Iwalese men in the streets, the sight of a mob of women hustling along might have raised alarms. The few people they passed were women and children. Then they turned a corner, and in front of them walked a single armed Iwalese man. They froze. He looked them over, jerked his head to indicate move on, and strode away. All of the women breathed again. The cluster of women wound along streets and alleys for 400 yards until they reached a tumble of stone blocks against the inner side of the city's outer riverside wall. Their guide walked up to the pile, then picked her way around and over blocks, Honorind following.
And there it was,
a slit in the bottom of the wall. The two women could feel air coming through. They squeezed through a 4-foot passage to stand on the other side of the main wall. A moon just rose over the horizon and cast a faint yellowish glow in the night. Before them lay a steep slope down to the river. The press of women squeezing through the gap forced them to move along the base of the wall. Soon all were standing outside, and Honorin got her first estimate of how many women there were. At least 30. Some started talking, to be hushed by others. Word got to Honorind and Gwynedd that some women said they couldn't go down that slope, and others said they couldn't swim. Several turned and walked back into town. Honorind had no time for them. It was their decision. But they might, deliberately or inadvertently, raise an alarm. "We go now," said Honorind, and she stepped onto the slope. The lucky or most agile women stayed on their feet part of the way down. Several tumbled the entire distance to the river. Two went directly into the river and disappeared. Two women lay dead at the bottom, and six had injuries severe enough to be helped or carried by the others. Honorind felt bruises on every part of her body, and she had blood coming from a dozen superficial cuts. She didn't notice. Crossing the river, they lost several more women. They never knew how many, since there had been no exact count at the beginning. Once across, exhausted, wet, bruised, if not worse, and with no idea where they were going, they headed for a line of trees a mile away. Spurred on by adrenaline flowing through their veins, the exhausted women hurried as fast as their bodies would allow, while looking back every few feet, fearful of pursuers.
"We're almost to the trees," said Honorind, gasping for air. "We can rest there."
They ran and stumbled the last few yards. Honorind's legs trembled from exertion. But before collapsing onto the ground, she turned to ensure the last of the women had reached the trees. Suddenly, a man's voice called out.
"And who in God's creation are you women?"
Honorin spun and her throat constricted in fear before she recognized that the man spoke Cadeli and not with the Iwilese accent. She pulled her knife from her belt and held it against her side so he wouldn't see it. Gwynedd and the brown-haired girl did the same.
"Who are you?" asked Honorind.
"I'm Stentese, and we've been out killing Narthani and Iwilese. However, Hanslow is more than we can chew off, and we're about to head back."
"There.
I've told you who I am.
Now you do the same."
"Oh my God," blurted a woman. "Is it true then the clans have beaten the Narthani in a battle?"
"Well, I suppose it depends on what you say is a victory. But at least we drove them out of Moreland province."
"Please," begged Honorind. "We're all slaves, captured by the Narthani and the Iwilese. We escaped when they sent all men to the defenses. But they'll be coming after us once they realize so many of us are missing. Many of us are Morelanders, plus Predi and a few from elsewhere on Anyar."
The man cursed, then spit to one side.
"Well, that's not part of our plan. We need to get out of here fast. Once the Narthani realize there aren't that many of us and we aren't attacking, they'll send men out to look for us."
Honorin feared he meant he wouldn't help them.
Please, she implored. At least take the women with babies. You have to do something.
He grunted. Oh, we'll take you all. It's just got to be quick. With that, he turned and whistled. Another whistle answered, followed by sounds of horses, many horses. In the darkness, Honorind couldn't tell the number of men, but with a lot of shouting and shoving, all of the women and children doubled up with riders, and they headed east at a trot.